Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman Drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Women Show.
Just, you're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. Do you ever find yourself overwhelmed with your responsibilities, and it seems like you'll never get it all done? Well, you're not alone. We all need to remember to use our superpowers, the ones we already have but don't use all the time, and take advice and wisdom from one another. Towards the end of the show, in a segment called Superpowers for Success, I ask my guest about her superpowers, and the answers will give you the strength, perspective, and power to keep on being the well woman you are. I'm so happy you're here, so thanks for tuning in. Today's topic is discovering the secret power of mentorship, and hopefully by the end of the show, you'll be inspired to examine the ways in which you communicate and to consider how women use their strengths and communication to create meaningful connections, and how this innate skill can be useful in the workplace. My guest today is Myra Travin, author of School of You, How Guerrilla Learning Can Change Your Life. She's a learning experience designer and technical coach, assisting organizations to be more resilient, creative, and supportive of the teams they're promoted to manage. Myra recently spoke at South by Southwest and will soon be presenting at the International Coach Federation PRISM Awards. Today I talk with Myra about the benefits of coaching, how a woman's intuitive perspective can aid companies in achieving success, and how she envisions the future of artificial intelligence. The free giveaway today is Myra's 5 killer tips for women who want great mentors. I really like this giveaway because it shows you simple, doable steps to find the right mentor for you and overcome any fears or shyness you may have about reaching out. Now to my interview with Myra Travin. I'm speaking with Myra Travin today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Giovanna. It's lovely to be here.
It's so good to have you on the show. Tell me, Myra, what are you working on right now and how does it impact women's lives?
I am working on several projects that I think you might say are very unusual for women because they're in the tech sector. They're startup projects. I'm working on an algorithm for matching, which I think is very, very exciting. And I'm also doing a lot in technology as far as technology and women being able to be successful in that environment. So several projects in that area.
Okay. So what is the algorithm for matching? What does that mean?
Okay. An algorithm basically is a set of mathematical calculations that are done in such a way that they can be predictive. They can be predictive of results. You don't find a lot of women in startup situations like this who are running around with their algorithms. And I think because, women tend to be a little bit underrepresented in startup situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just did a funding kind of roadshow piece, and there were 17 men and me doing presentations.
Oh.
So the algorithm is, for me, a way of looking for predictive results, but yet having a very ethical underpinning of that. So it's very humanistic. It's the kind of thing that a woman who values relationships and values people would probably come up with.
Okay, so this is sounding very abstract to me. So give me an example of where would you, how would you
use it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in situations, for example, I just did a presentation yesterday at the International Coaching Foundation, and the Coaching Foundation values the idea of relationships, and it values coaching as a way of really helping people to become successful within corporations. So my algorithm is a very interesting way of looking at how people might match one mentor with one mentee, people who have similar interests, people who have similar capabilities. So those kinds of mathematical predictive equations are such that we can help people meet other people who have similar skill sets to assist them. And if you're starting to think this sounds like a dating app, believe me, we've thought of it. We have, because it's a very unusual algorithm. It is what we call a market adaptation. And it's unusual in the way that it looks for criteria that can really be profound, not just on the surface. So yeah, we've thought of that.
And so you come up with this algorithm based on certain questions that you ask?
Yes, you can say that it is based on questions. Algorithms use inputs. So we do use a series of questions as inputs, and it lets us know. I would say it's also true for me in the learning space, because I've been in learning development for, many years now. So I'm also looking at machine learning applications as well. But in this particular use case, it does use questions to be able to help identify the kinds of matching scenarios that would be most positive for both mentors and mentees.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And so are you trying to develop this so that lots of women can use it? Or is it something that you're just using in your company?
No, I'm definitely trying to develop it for lots of women. It goes along with my tech shift model, the idea of how I'm about to write something called How Technology Companies Are Failing and How Women Can Help Them Succeed. And it's going to use some of the things I'm talking about today, so some of the algorithmic strategies, but it's also going to talk about how women have a certain type of, and I call it a gift from their DNA, similar to what my mother gave me. My mother was very entrepreneurial at a time when people didn't do that sort of thing, but she was extraordinarily resourceful and resilient. And she had as all women do, she had a very strong feeling that she should keep her family together, that she should make sure that everybody was healthy and happy and thriving. So I think our mothers do give us that. I grew up in an Italian family, 13 brothers and sisters. So there was a lot going on there. And I would say that my mother, more than anyone else, has given me this kind of gift from her DNA to mine about how to encourage participation and inclusion in corporations, as well as the courage to be able to move into a non-traditional field such as I'm in, which is the technology area.
Yeah. Okay. And you describe yourself as an educational futurist.
Yes.
What is that?
I know. That's always the first question I get. Some titles are given to you and some titles you give yourself. And I would say I've given myself this title because I believe that in the field of education, training, and technology, they're all really coalescing to change the way that we are going to be learning now and certainly in the future. So I'm a futurist in this area because I think it's a little bit like baseball. I don't think you can hit the ball where it is. I think to be able to hit it out of the park, you have to hit it and see where it is coming, right? And then make sure that you're hitting it at the right time and in the right way to be able to make a difference.
And you talked a little bit about working in the startup area, and there are some challenges with with supporting women to succeed in that space. Yeah. What are those challenges, and why, like, how is the entrepreneurial startup area failing women right now?
Well, I'll tell you, I was at a conference one time, and I had a gentleman walk up to me who had a school that taught coding. And he walked up to me with sort of a, you know, a wine in one hand and a shrimp in the other and said, okay, you're presenting, because there weren't that many women presenting. He said, why is it that women don't code? More women don't code. And I said, it's the environment. I mean, it didn't even take me a heartbeat to be able to tell him that. And he looked at me as if I wasn't giving him the real answer. And he said, oh, yeah. So I ended up writing something for the Twist blog at the conference that I presented at, saying, why don't more women code? And to answer your question simply, it's because the environment really isn't set up to mirror us as being valuable, to understand the kinds of skills and capabilities that we bring into those situations and organizations, and to value them effectively. You know, there I was doing my tech shift model, as I've talked about. I went into Fortune 500 companies, very large companies, and I realized why they were not being successful. One of the reasons is because in their leadership programs, they were valuing more than anything else when the rubber hits the road at the operational level, not at the HR level where they talk about what they would like to see happen, but at the operational level, it tended to be, and I'm in Seattle, you know, so it's, you can know the companies off the top of your head that I'm talking about. They tended to value things like individual problem solving and, acquisition, adoption, making money. And the things that they valued less at that operational level were people being able to learn and grow and prosper. So that's why I created the model. And that's why I'm wanting to write this op-ed, to talk to companies like Google, to talk to companies like Amazon, to talk to companies like Microsoft and say, hey, you know, women have something that is essential for the success of an organization.
So if they're getting it at the HR level and in their visioning, you know, level, but it's not translating to the operational level, is how do you help them make that shift?
Well, I can tell you that there's a specific way to make it that I've, you know, evaluated and described. But one of the ways to help them make it is to make sure that there are more women in those types of positions, that there are more women that are allowed to have a, and when I say allowed, that's a kind of a funky word to use, but, you know, to value the contributions that we have, that we can make. And at the startup level, there I was, one out of 17. And, you know, it's interesting that there aren't more of us there. It's interesting that we are in terms of angel funding. Oh Lord, I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
There is such a difficult road that women have to get funding for their startups. And I don't know if I can give you all the reasons for that, but I can certainly tell you that it's, if you just look at the numbers, you'll see we're just not represented.
Yeah. And we hear that over and over, and there are some efforts to change that, but it's definitely an uphill battle right now.
It is. And I personally am working on a strategy to find women who are in the, you know, who are in this area or who want to fund this area to get involved funding other women. Because I think if women who want to fund other women start doing that, then you'll start to see that our numbers will rise in startups and our numbers will rise in, you know, companies taking us seriously.
Mm-hmm. If one of the issues is the environment in which women are working and men are working in tech, And one of the differences that would, one of the things that would make a big difference is how people are treated and supported to learn and grow, as you were saying. Where do policies in the workplace come in terms of family-friendly policies like flexible scheduling and paid time off and paid maternity leave and those kinds of things?
Well, I think those policies are starting to be adopted more, and see, you'll see them in larger companies, right? But the truth is you have to be in those situations and being valued and promoted, right, to be, you know, to avail yourself of those perks and those policies.
But don't you think having those policies in place would attract those,
oh, for sure,
those people?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think you're already seeing some of those policies in place. Mm-hmm. And starting to become more and more. But that's why I say there's a level that is sort of intentional and through HR policy. And then there is a level that is in the, you know, where the work gets done at the operational level. And that's where really where I see these, you know, these things being less important.
Okay, Myra, I wanted to ask you about your book because you recently spoke at South by Southwest, and you also published a book called School of You, How Guerrilla Learning Can Change Your Life. Tell us briefly about the book and how this is contributing to your work.
I wrote School of You, and if you see the first page, you'll see that I wrote it as a gift to individual learners. And what I know from my years in learning and development and OD is that learning has only become...
OD meaning organizational development?
Yes, organizational development. What I've realized is learning has only become more and more personalized. Because of cell phones, certainly, you can see that people now have access to a school in their hand, you might say. They can choose where and when to learn. They can choose how to learn. So you might say that this is a bit of a revolutionary thought, that people should become their own learning curators. I was on a task force at the Gates Foundation, and one of the things we talked about was how important it was to create environments that learners could choose and become, more responsible for their own learning. Mm. And this really, in many ways, grew out of that. And at South by Southwest, I was giving a presentation on learning design, on LX design. Mm-hmm. And all of this centered around the idea that people need to take responsibility for their own learning, because I believe that learning is absolutely survival.
How does this idea interface with the traditional learning route, like going to college?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say that if you are going to college and you want to be a brain surgeon, I am not suggesting you DIY.
Right.
I've got some strategies around that, but I do understand that our current learning models were really created in the Industrial Revolution, right? They were, we were an agrarian society. We moved into a factory-based society, and in our schools, even now, were created to, as a way of keeping us all kind of controlled, so that certain things could get done. But as time has moved on, I use a metaphor of the difference between the Catholic Church and the Reformation. Early on in the Catholic Church, we talked about the idea that you had to have an intermediary in between you and, let's say, God. And in my example, what I am saying is more like the Reformation, where Martin Luther suggested that you should be the person who talks directly to your source. And I use that in the book as an example. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that people need to find ways for themselves to learn that are the most powerful you know, resource-based and mentor-based and any resource that you can get your hands on that personalizes learning for you. And yes, if you're in a program, such as a degree program, understand that I love teachers and I love teaching and I have a great deal of respect for them. So I would never say that we would want to get in the way of teaching. But I do think that there, if you read my book, you'll find that guerrilla learning is a way of finding the best strategies for learning, no matter what situation you're in. If you're teaching yourself, if you're homeschooling, if you are in a university, all of those, or a corporate environment, all of those things are covered in the book. But yet I say, you be responsible for
it.
Don't give your power away.
Oh, interesting. And this approach would support individual coaching and mentoring, or maybe even group coaching and mentoring, but as opposed to only signing up for large, you know, classes, instructional classes in colleges and institutions. It's sort of a way to say coaching and mentoring, there's value in that.
I have a tremendous belief in coaching and mentoring. I think anytime that you can find someone who is a resource for you at a time that you need it and is someone that you can really relate to, you are in the best situation possible. So I believe in things like what we call in corporate learning performance support, point of need support. And I think that that is true and can be true across the board. It's just funny that we think, okay, well, I'm going to go and get this degree and I'm going to just depend on the fact that this organization, this school, or this teacher knows everything that is best for me. Mm. Whereas if you switch your perspective, you might say, I wonder if this school, this program, or this teacher is best for me. And if there's anything that I need to do to make sure that they understand me, that I'm getting the best resources I can, and that it's going to be the best possible situation for me. People just don't consider it.
And Myra, is this work that you're doing, does it stem from a personal journey? Why are you doing this, all this?
Why am I doing this? Well, I would say that's true. You know, it is true that my mother died when I was 15. And basically what happened to me after that was when I went to university, I went to a traditional school, Illinois Wesleyan, in Bloomington, Illinois. What I started to realize as I got there is that I had a wonderful teacher, Carol Brandt, and Carol Brandt told me, you know, people learn differently, Myra. And this is very early on in my schooling. She said, people learn differently. And you tend to be what they called at the time, a very kinesthetic learner. I didn't know what that meant. Hmm. But I did know that when I was in school, it was difficult for me to be successful only with what you might at the time have called auditory strategies. So just sitting in a class and listening, it was very, very, very difficult for me to feel engaged by that. Mm. So I had to have something more active. So when Carol and I had that discussion, it really started a journey for me of realizing what I had to do personally to be successful in educational environments. So then from there on, I started to say, well, I'm probably not the only one. And I started to have a great deal of sympathy and empathy, really, for individual learners.
Mm. Myra, we're going into a segment called Superpowers for Success. So I want to ask you a few questions. And the first one is, what does success in life mean to you?
Success in life means to me that I am able to take the best of me that I can find and give it away to other people so that it may help them become and find the best in themselves as a teacher, I would say.
And is that mostly women or men and women?
I'm all good for, come on along, men, women, it's all good. But I tend to, because I feel that women need a little bit of extra encouragement, and the quality that I would say my mother gave me of resilience and courage, I would like to give that to them. So they probably are standing first in line for me.
And you've mentioned your mother several times. She clearly made such an impact on you.
She did.
Why? How do you think that happened? I mean, you were obviously very young when she passed away. How do you know, or how did you find out what gifts she gave you?
Well, I think by the time that I got into, you know, as an adult and got into school, I started realizing that I was a good deal more courageous and a good deal more willing to risk and take chances than maybe other people that were around me. As a matter of fact, I got my undergraduate degree was in theater, and my first job was as a science technical officer for. And I remember my father calling me and saying, "I have no clue what's going on." And one of the reasons that I did that is because I have never said to myself, I am not allowed to think in a certain way. Just because I have a degree in theater doesn't mean that I can't create an algorithm, you see? So this is what I'm saying to women. I'm saying, you may have an idea. You may have, you know, something that is kind of knocking at the door for you to think about and to do. But you say, well, women can't do that, or I can't think that way, or that's not where I went to school, or any number of things. So I do believe, honestly, that is what my mother gave me, because she, you know, there she was with two kids and staying home with these kids, but she went out and did all these things. She made her own Italian food. She brought it to the grocery store at a time when you didn't do that. Hmm. And, you know, she started cutting hair. She started making clothes. She started doing...
Very resourceful.
Right, writing cookbooks. So me watching that as a little girl, I said, well, heck, you know, my mother's not afraid of anything. So I'm gonna go ahead and do that. And that's the kind of thing that I want. Mm. For women, that's what I mean by the DNA of female leadership. I really think that we can bring something powerful and courageous and nurturing to the game.
Yeah, you know, you and I are both lucky in that we have our moms to thank for a lot. It resonates so much with me when you talk about your mom, because I had similar experience. I mean, maybe different experiences, but, you know, ultimately my mother is my inspiration and my, just whenever I think, can I do this? And what, you know, questions, I think, well, look at what she did. So I think I can do this.
That's right.
But what about people who don't have that or haven't identified that yet, either in their mother or in a strong female role model?
Well, what I would say is maybe not everyone is quite as lucky as we are, Giovanna, but I would say that there is just something, and that's why I say in our DNA, whether you've got it from a specific woman or not, understand that this idea of making something thrive, making it grow, making sure it's safe, making sure it can, you know, it can be nurtured and live to its fullest potential is just something I think that women have in their DNA. Mm. So I would suggest that they, you know, they do think about the kind of female role models that inspire them and question themselves as to why that is, and find out what aligns with their, you know, their own personal DNA.
Mm-hmm. What is the best tip you can give listeners for reaching out and asking someone to be their mentor?
The best tip that I can tell you is, when you reach out to someone to mentor you, understand that 9 times out of 10, they would be very flattered to do so. And so it is to overcome your initial shyness, right? And to understand that you probably, and this I was taught by a wonderful teacher Ivan Barzakhov, who was a teacher of mine. Ivan said that teaching and learning are the same thing. They're just on different sides of the coin. So as much as you may be scared or shy to ask them, understand you are going to give them as much, oddly, as they will give you. That's what happens.
Yeah, and I think if people really understand that, they won't feel so shy about asking for that support. Because they will feel like, well, I'm also contributing to this. But I don't think that's a really well accepted idea that, you know, that it's mutual.
It is. It absolutely is. And, you know, I mean, different things will get in the way. That person may not have time right now, but they may have time in a few months. So I would say, you know, cast a wide net. And there's no reason that you can't have more than one mentor for more than one thing.
Yeah. What about being specific in your ask? Like, what about asking for, you know, like how specific should we be about asking for what support we need?
Right. Well, first of all, I would say get to know them and find out, you know, if it's somebody that you don't know and have never met, then you might want to be very specific and say, this is what I really appreciate about you. I'm looking for, you know, to start a discussion with you that may end up in some form of mentorship. Can you tell me a little bit about if you've ever done that before or, you know, what your process is? Now, if it's somebody you know, I would say take them to coffee and say, hey, you know, you really inspire me and I would like to learn and, you know, learn from you and learn with you. And I think that knowing you will make a difference in my life. So I would suggest if it's somebody that you know, a really personal approach and then working out the details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Myra, when did you know that you were really good at what you do? Was there a moment when you thought, oh, I've kind of got this?
Well, I would say that once people started to ask me for help and once people started to ask for my opinion, and because I've done so many different kinds of things, whenever that, and this is why the concept of mirroring is just so essential inside organizations. When people come to you and you can see on their face that they appreciate what you've done and they respect what you've done. Probably it happened for me, in the 90s when I started doing conferences and people would come up afterwards and ask for my help or what I thought of certain things. Mm. And that's something that, you know, we, as women, we love to give feedback to one another. And that is it's a tremendous gift. I've said the word gift, I think, 3 times today. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm going today. It's just what I'm thinking. It's a wonderful gift to be able to be in conversation and give people your thoughts and ideas. So I would say that's when I knew.
And can you describe a personal habit that contributes to your well-being? Like, how do you stay well in order to do all the things you do?
I would say the habit of a mental habit, really, more than anything else, that says I can take the next step. I don't know what the next step or next steps are after that. So, you know, how sometimes you want to plan everything 30 steps ahead. Well, I try to do just the next right thing. So it's not so scary. Believe me, when you're developing an algorithm, which is an odd thing to do. And in a, you know, technology field, which not everybody is going to respect or appreciate. The only thing that I do is I say, well, the next step is to write this thought down or take this action today or talk to this person today. Mm. Like if I get too far ahead of myself, it's too scary.
Yeah. It gets too big and you think, well, you get lost in the big vision. Cool.
And if it's too scary, you go, well, you know what? I'm just not going to do that at all.
Mm-hmm. To break it down into pieces that you can manage.
Yeah.
What superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
Well, I went to an interesting conference where they asked you to write your superpower down on your badge. Like, this is my superpower. So I had a chance to think about this. I would say more than anything that the superpower I have is resilience. But I'm also very intuitive. I that's really helpful. But resilience is something that, man, it never lets you down.
How are you resilient? Like, how does that manifest?
Well, it manifests in ways that when you get told no 1,000,000,000 times, which you do as a woman in, you know, in technology or in working on a startup or trying to get funding or, you know, in any of the things that I'm doing, you get told no a good deal of the time. So I used to have a guy that I worked with who was so funny, and he used to say, some will, some won't, so what? Right? So I thought about that, and, you know, that is true, and it does lead you. Every time you get a no, it leads you to the next possible yes, but you're going to get a lot of no's, and if we bring baseball back in here, we're going to be, you know, if you hit, what, 3 times out of 10, you're, you know, you're doing really, really well. So that resilience is to say, okay, next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are you reading right now? What are you reading that is like on your nightstand?
Well, I'm reading a lot of things that have to do with technology and that have to do with, you know, mostly, honestly, not books, but mostly, you know, articles, one after the other. Because I'm working so much in the area of artificial intelligence, and I wrote something recently that you can find in the Arizona Republic on artificial intelligence and shared persona, I'm just inundated with articles about artificial intelligence because I believe this one weird thing. I believe that it isn't just going to be, here's us, and now in 5 years, here's our, you know, robot corporate overlords, right? I think there's something that happens in the middle. And let's talk about female DNA. It's me wanting to create a relationship with a sentient form of technology. I want to be in relationship with it. I want it to know me. I want to know it. And that's why this concept of shared persona for me is where I'm spending a lot of my time and research.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Almost everything you've talked about is very intellectual and in your head, and obviously you're taking action on it too. But I just want to hear about something that you're doing that is not to do with your work. Like, do you, you know, some sort of thing you do every day that just gets you out of your headspace and like into your life?
Sure. I walk every day, and I walk long distances because it helps me think, and I love my dog. So my dog comes with.
Nice.
and I meditate. I really believe that taking that time, whether it's walking or, just in silence, helps me, especially because, as you suggest, my work is so cerebral and I'm all thinking all the time. Mm. I just need moments during the day where I can appreciate the, I'm looking out the window right now and I have a hummingbird feeder and there's a hummingbird at it right now. So, I mean, I need moments like that.
Mm, yeah. To connect with the world and with nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, last question for you, Myra, what advice would you give yourself, your 25-year-old self?
Wow. I would say whatever you're planning, it's probably going to work out a little bit differently than that. Yeah. So, you know, fasten your seatbelts because it's going to be a hilarious ride. You can't imagine the things that change between, you know, 20 and now. It's such a strange world we live in. But yet, if you can kind of surf on top of that change and say, well, I never would expected to see myself here, but wow, isn't this a cool place to be? That's what I would say. Chill.
chill and enjoy chill the ride.
Relax and enjoy that ride and just see what happens.
I like it. Well, thank you so much, Myra. This has been a great conversation. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Giovanna. It's been my pleasure.
That's it for our show today. I've been speaking with Myra Travin, technical coach working in the startup and tech industry, helping organizations to function more efficiently by adjusting the way they treat their employees. Myra recently presented her work at South by Southwest and is currently working on developing an algorithm for matching mentors with mentees. I spoke with Myra about incorporating female perspectives in the tech industry, discovering the power of mentorship, and re-examining the way we look at learning and teaching. You can get Myra's 5 killer tips for women who want great mentors for free at wellwomanlife.com/025show. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings together women to share our successes and challenges as leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email me at info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes. And while you're there, leave a review. This helps raise visibility for the show, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week for you. You can also continue the conversation in the Well Woman Life community group at facebook.com/groups/wellwomanlifecommunity. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you were listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.